Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to All Crime, No Cattle. We are a Texas-based true crime podcast, and I am Shay.
And I'm Aaron.
That's right.
I expected you to say, starring Shay.
Oh, well, starring both of us. It's been a while. It's been a week. We took a week off because we were really sick.
We did not take a week off.
Technically, we didn't, because we gave you extra content last week. We did a double episode. And we knew sickness was impending. There was impending doom. We went ahead and got both those episodes out. We took a week to recover. I'm still a little bit sick. Aaron is fully recovered. But it's an Aaron episode, so we should be in good hands.
Well, I don't know about that, but let's hope so.
All right. Well, do we have anything else to discuss in the beginning, except for our dogs being really noisy?
No, that's all the news I have. Brienne won't settle down. There she goes. Well, this is episode 12, Fort Worth Double Homicide and the Case of the Vandeweege Family.
Ooh, watch out. Hometown, Fort Worth, Funky Town. That's where we're from.
Absolutely is. So if you live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and you pay attention to the news at all, you've almost certainly heard of this case out of December 2016. It was all over the news for a time, and I remember watching the first breaking news reports about it with you, and I remember exactly what we said about it. So there was a lot of initial coverage about this case, but the media really slowed down with it after a time. So chances are, even though you might be familiar with this case, you might not know the details, and the details are very crazy. Before we begin, I always try to give a heads up if there's anything obviously upsetting in the stories that we cover. And I do want to let everyone know that this is a case that does involve the murder of an infant. I'm not going to linger on any of the gruesome aspects of this or anything, but I do want to warn people about that because it's obviously something very upsetting. And if you need to hold off and listen to this episode later at all, we totally understand. So I think this is our most recent case. The murders only took place a little over a year ago. So this is a case that is ongoing. The trial has not yet happened. So all this information is very new and it hasn't been corroborated by an actual court case. So what I mean exactly about that will be clear towards the end of this episode. But in order to fully put this thing together, I had to compile all this information from tons of different news reports, affidavits, legal documents. I also even found some Facebook profiles that helped me kind of fill in a few details.
Oh, wow. A deep dive.
Yes. It's like I'm a real researcher. I knew there was a reason I went to grad school. So there aren't any nicely written articles or stories about this case, but I wanted to give some props to some of the reporters and news sites that I use for this research. So if you go to dfw.cbs.local, the reporter there is Jack Fink. He is the one who put some articles out about this case. WFAA, which is a local news organization in our area. Lauren Zakalik, she published some articles as well. Star Telegram, Deanna Boyd and Chris Harris both published some articles. And Claire Cardona from the Dallas News Those are all some people that you can look up and look up some of these articles about them. I can't read the article names exactly because the names will give you away what happened in this case.
Yeah, while you were doing your research, I was doing other things in the household, and every time you would pull up a web page, like a video would start playing, and it would start giving away hints about what had happened, and you would start yelling real loud, "Oh, don't listen."
Yeah, exactly, because this is all like breaking news stuff. So I mean, there's nothing to go on besides these very basic news reports. But I still think this is a really interesting story, especially for people who live in this area. But I think even beyond that, because we're going to get into it and it's pretty crazy. So this is our first case coming out of our hometown, Fort Worth. So Fort Worth is located in north central Texas, and we are the 16th largest city in the U.S., which surprised me.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
I wouldn't think we were that big. We have a population of about 850,000 people. It's the fifth largest city in Texas, which that sounds about right to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You might hear people mention DFW or the DFW Metroplex. So we are the FW of the DFW, with the D, of course, being Dallas. We're about 30 to 40 miles west of Dallas. And for example, if you choose to drive from Fort Worth to Dallas, it's about 30 to 45 minutes or so. That's for us, at least.
Yeah, and right smack in the middle is where we went to college, in Arlington.
Yes, exactly. Now, I don't recommend doing this drive, as I have mentioned before in this podcast. Driving to Dallas is insane. It's like as soon as you crest that hill and you see the Dallas skyline splay out in front of you, like people immediately lose their minds and start driving like maniacs.
It is pretty wild, yeah.
I do not like it. So Fort Worth was established in 1849 as an army outpost, which is where the fort comes from. And if you've ever been here, you know that the whole Wild West slash cowboy thing is really popular here. I love it, ironically, but there are a lot of people who use this as a serious, or think about this as a serious reputation that they're really proud of.
Yeah, it's the stockyards. Like when you have people come from out of town, that's the first place you tell them that, oh, if you're into touristy kind of stuff, that's where you got to go. You got to go to the stockyards. You got to go to Billy Miner's, the White Elephant Bar, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So this story is about the Vandeweege family, who lived in a far north suburb of Fort Worth called Saginaw.
Oh, yeah. That is a far north city.
And Saginaw is about 20,000 people. It's really a suburb of Fort Worth. And in fact, because of this case and the extenuating circumstances of this case, it was really handled by Fort Worth PD. And pretty much anywhere you go says that it is a Fort Worth crime. But technically, if you want to get technical, it really happened in Saginaw.
Saginaw is kind of like there's the suburbs, but then there's like the suburbs that are turning into the country. And that's what Saginaw used to be. They're getting more suburbanated. Is that a word?
Nope.
Okay. They're getting a little more development in the Saginaw area. But it's still very country. There's a bunch of old grain silos that are not used anymore. And it's still got a lot of like farming heritage in Saginaw.
Craig Vandeweege met Shanna Riddle in 2012, and they were married in May of 2014. They tried to have a baby for years, and Shanna actually miscarried 3 times before finally getting pregnant. Family members stated that the couple were really ecstatic about the baby, who they decided to name Diedrich. In May of 2016, Shanna and Craig moved to Fort Worth from Denver, Colorado. Family members said that they moved to Fort Worth to find a good home for their family, and I can really only imagine that it had something to do with money, since it's far less expensive to live in Fort Worth than it is in Colorado, especially Denver, Colorado. So we have family in Colorado, and Colorado is absolutely gorgeous, and I would love to live there, but it's very expensive, especially considering if you compare it to the Fort Worth, or I guess anywhere in Texas, really. It's really expensive to live there. And that's Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that's the thing about Texas is since real estate is so cheap and we don't have state income tax, there are a ton of implants and people moving from places like Colorado to get jobs and live here.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a growing family, you know, the move to Fort Worth, they're going to be their basic expenses as far as mortgage and that kind of stuff. It's going to be decreased greatly just from doing that. Craig was also in a position to get a promotion at Costco with a move. So he worked at the optical department and was apparently promoted to a managerial position with the move.
Oh, one of those kind of get your eyes tested places inside of Costco.
Well, I don't think it was the doctor's office or anything.
That, but maybe sometimes where you sell glasses.
Exactly. I think I think he was an optician.
Yeah.
Which is different. Yeah. Shanna was a registered nurse and she worked at a hospital. So they moved to a quiet, safe residential area. This was in Saginaw, far north Fort Worth. Their son, Diedrich, was born in September of 2016. And Shanna was on maternity leave, according to some sources. Other sources suggested that maybe she actually quit her job in order to take care of the baby. So I'm not exactly sure what the state of her employment was at the time, if she had quit her job, at least temporarily, to take care of the baby, or if she was just still on maternity leave. Because he was very young, you know, at this point, he was about 3 months old.
But that puts a lot of stress on the husband.
Yeah, it does. On December 15th, 2016, a Thursday, Craig left for work around 10:30 a.m., and he said he left his wife and son still asleep. That evening at around 9:30 p.m., 35-year-old Craig called 911, claiming that he found his wife, Shanna, 36 years old, and son, 3-month-old Diedrich, dead after returning to their home after work. Detectives said that in the 911 call, Craig spoke in an overly calm manner and that he, quote, wasn't scared that an intruder might still be in his house. And basically, he remained in the house for the majority of this 911 call.
Wow, that's a red flag.
Well, we'll get into it. So I tried looking up the 911 call and it doesn't appear that it's been released yet. So I guess the only statements that we have about the 911 call are the statements that law enforcement have made about the call. From these statements, again, it looks like Craig was very calm. He was unemotional while he was reporting this call. He also repeatedly points out that he had just arrived home from work, even before he mentions the deaths of his wife and child. He also mentions in the 911 call that there was blood all over his wife's neck and in the bassinet where the baby lay, and the front door to the house had been unlocked when he had gotten home. He also described the house as, quote, torn up inside. When emergency responders and police get to the house, Craig was sitting outside, again, rather calm. He was a little misty-eyed. He maybe had like a film of tears on his eyes, but otherwise he showed absolutely no emotion. When investigators entered the house, they saw that the cabinets and drawers in the kitchen had been left open, but it didn't look like they had been rifled through or anything. Everything inside the drawers and the cabinets was still kind of neatly arranged. It didn't appear that there were any items of value that were taken as well. There were guns, TVs, jewelry, and other items still in the house. These were items that were out in the open that would have been prime objects for a robber to have taken, but they were still there. The family's two dogs had been locked inside a room in the house and were unharmed. The back door was unlocked and there were marks on the door frame that looked like pry marks. However, the pry marks appeared to have been made both inside and outside the house. Additionally, when the door was closed, it didn't appear that an object could actually be inserted between the door and the frame to be able to make the marks that were observed. And this basically led investigators to believe that the door had actually been open when the marks were made to the frame of the door.
Weird.
In the bedroom, the dresser drawers again had been pulled out, but it didn't look like anyone had actually gone through them. There were two small safes that had been opened with all of the contents inside them kind of strewn out on the floor. One safe had a combination lock and the other a key lock, meaning whoever opened them would have needed both the key and the combination. Both mother and child had been murdered in the same way. Their throats had been slit as they laid in their beds. Shanna was found in the master bedroom and Diedrich found in his crib next to her. Shanna had no defensive wounds and her blood had pooled just around her neck. It wasn't smeared on any of the parts of the bedding or anything like that. And from this, it appeared that she had been either asleep or unconscious when she had been killed.
So she died almost instantly.
Yes.
Wow.
I mean, we don't know the details, but it sounds like it was a very thorough job.
So this is hypothesizing that we have a burglar who comes in and burgles nothing. And just really quickly, methodically murders
dispatches
a woman and a baby.
Yes. So some sort of home intruder situation. When emergency responders and police got to the house, it also appeared as if Shanna and Diedrich had been dead for longer than what Craig's story had accounted for. So obviously the claim would have been that Shanna and Diedrich had been killed sometime between him leaving for work that morning and him coming home that evening. And that's especially because they were found in their beds. I bet that the story was that they had been killed very early that morning before they had gotten up for the day. But to investigators, it looked like they had been dead for even longer than this.
Really?
Yes.
How long are we talking about?
Well, again, I don't have the full details of that. That is just what investigators reported. So again, this is something that will probably come up later. While at the police station giving his statement to the police, Craig fell asleep. And he actually slept for a long portion of the time that he was at the station.
What?
Mm-hmm. He also refused to let investigators examine his cell phone as he deemed it intrusive.
Huh.
He claimed that he knew nothing about the murders and that he didn't know of anyone who would want to hurt his family. He said that the last time that he saw his wife was the morning of the murders when he kissed his wife and baby goodbye and him and Shanna had told each other that they loved each other. He said that he had tried texting her a couple of times that afternoon, but he never received a response. It didn't seem to worry him too much because he just thought that she was busy with the baby. He also produced receipts showing that on the day of the murders, he had purchased a set of diamond earrings for his wife and a ladder he needed to use to hang their wedding photos. He had also driven her car that day to Costco to get a tire repaired for her.
Well, I think if you had just been murdered with our child, there's no way I'm sleeping in the next, 100 hours until I'm at full exhaustion.
Yeah.
I wouldn't just comfortably pass out and take a little nappy poo.
It's a little odd, but you know, everybody acts differently in a time of grief.
Sure. Some people nap in a time of grief.
Yeah. Well, I guess some people do. I don't. I'm the opposite when I'm nervous, but let's move on and see what else happens. So early reports stated that Craig had not been ruled out as a suspect because, of course, he wasn't. He was obviously going to be the first person that people are going to look at when it comes to this case.
But he bought a ladder. Why would you expect him? He bought a ladder to hang their wedding photos.
He was such a good and decent, loving husband, clearly, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, when police requested a second interview with Craig on the Monday immediately following the murders, he declined, saying he wanted to consult with his lawyer. Now, a couple of things here. As you've already stated here, if you're being interviewed as a possible suspect in a homicide, it is absolutely your right to confer with a lawyer.
Sure.
It is important to have someone on your side to make sure your rights aren't being trampled upon, and I would strongly suggest that you do get an attorney. But, get your attorney and then go on to give your interview, right?
Yeah.
Now, he had already given his first statement to the police, that was the night of the murders. I know that personally, if I had come home to find you murdered, I would be at that police station with bells on, with a full list of all of the addresses and phone numbers of every person who had ever said anything bad about you in the past 5 years.
Yeah.
If someone gave you a side eye one time, I would have their information down and I would do anything within my power to figure out who did this horrible thing.
Yeah.
And if I could get an attorney, great. If I couldn't in time or I couldn't afford one or whatever, I would worry about that later. What comes first is trying to figure out who murdered you.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's pretty much everybody's response in this situation.
I imagine
not going to be worrying about what happens to me. They want to figure out what happened to their family members.
Sure, of course. But what I imagine about you is you would come prepared with snacks and energy drinks and you'd be in for the long haul and you'd pull like a triple all-nighter and you would be on those detectives.
I would be leading that investigation. Yeah, it would be like, I'm not super type A, but about this, I would be type A for sure.
There's not much that you would take the reins of, but I'm sure you would on
this. I mean, I'd like to give someone the benefit of the doubt that just because they lawyered up, it doesn't mean that they had anything to do with a murder. It does not mean that they're guilty. But honestly, it's really suspicious to me that a man whose wife and newborn was just murdered is basically avoiding talking to the police. And it's weird because the murders happened on a Thursday. They're wanting this second interview on a Monday. So it's only 4 days and he's already not cooperating with the police.
Yeah, it's like he's using his attorney to put up a barrier.
Exactly.
To avoid giving a second time to
Absolutely.
Talk to them.
Absolutely. And in fact, Fort Worth Police Detective Matt Barron told the Fort Worth Star-Telegram that, quote, "This extremely hinders our ability to move ahead and definitely hinders our ability to eliminate him. Anyone we can't eliminate is obviously suspect."
Yeah. And that's the thing, is if you're innocent, clear yourself as quickly as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And not even that, though, but give the information that you have that might lead to an arrest.
Exactly.
Lead to the person who actually did this thing. If you're innocent, you're going to say, "I want the person to be found immediately."
Mm-hmm.
The same day that police were trying to schedule the second interview with Craig, detectives discussed with crime scene investigators some of the evidence that had been collected in the home. They had found, quote, "a chemical reaction consistent with the presence of blood in the sinks and the master bedroom and kitchen."
A chemical reaction.
Yeah, like luminol.
Oh, okay. I see what you mean. Yeah. If you're not familiar, you should be familiar with luminol if you're listening to this podcast.
Absolutely.
It's something that investigators spray and it luminesces and you can see the presence of blood.
I think it's a chemical reaction with the iron present in blood, I believe. Is that true? I don't know. But it's cool and it looks neat.
Yeah, you can see it under a black light.
Yeah, exactly. So there was no visible blood present in this area, in these areas, though. So this suggested that someone had cleaned up the scene. So either washed their hands in these sinks or maybe washed off the weapon that was used to cut the throats of Shanna and Diedrich.
Ooh. So it's one of those like faint luminesces where they like with luminol where they can tell someone's done like a cleaning.
Exactly.
Okay.
But there's no, if you just looked at it, there was no blood visible. Wow. So somebody clearly had cleaned the scene.
Mm.
On Wednesday, detectives returned to the Van De Weege home and served a search warrant. Detectives wouldn't comment upon what they were trying to find, but Fox 4 reported that they were in the house for about an hour and they carried out several bags of evidence along with the back door of the house. And remember, the back door is the door that had the weird kind of mysterious pry marks. And so they carried that away with them as well as evidence. When investigators were there serving the search warrant, Craig was not there. By this time, he had returned to Colorado ostensibly to help with the funeral preparation of Shanna and Diedrich.
Because she's going to be buried back in Colorado.
Exactly, because she was born and raised in Colorado. So her and Diedrich were going to be buried back at home in Colorado with her family. So all of this obviously is a little weird. We have a lot of things that are really strongly pointing towards Craig as being the perpetrator of this horrible, horrible crime. But Craig was strongly supported by Shanna's family. And Shanna's father, Mark Riddle, told the people that, quote, "any suggestion that Craig is involved is absurd." In fact, Mark Riddle posted a comment on an early Star-Telegram article calling the negative comments in that article that others had made, quote, "detrimental to Craig and his innocence." He went on to say that, quote, "I believe in him and so do all of the other family members and friends gathered. Until you have had to deal with the mixed emotions that we've been experiencing since this episode, do not be judgmental lest you be judged."
So you're saying this story was posted online and he went on the comments part and posted on the comments online of his own case?
Yes.
Wow.
No. This is Mark Riddle. This is Shanna's father.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying his case, his family's case.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yes.
That's ballsy.
Well, imagine the pain, you know, his daughter and his grandson were just horribly murdered.
Sure.
And there are all these people who are, of course, you know, grabbing the torches and the pitchforks and going after Craig. And he's saying, "step off of my family. We support Craig."
Yeah.
And I just can't imagine the pain and the anger and the anguish and the grief and all of those. I mean, like he simply states the mixed emotions. I can't imagine, you know, a person in his position, what he would feel.
Sure.
And he was doing, you know, what he thought was right. He was defending his family, and Craig was very much a part of his family.
Yeah. It's just, you always run a risk when you step out on social media, especially when it's the comment section of the article about your case.
Never read a comment section. Yeah. This is true on anything on the internet. Just don't go there. Don't look at YouTube. Oh my God. And don't look at the comments of a news article, because you just get the worst. You get the bottom barrel people who comment on that kind of stuff. You're just going to get upset.
Yeah.
But poor Mark Reddle, you know, he saw these comments and he said, I'm going to say something in response because I can't take this. So as we know, Craig traveled to Colorado, we think to probably prepare for the funeral preparations of both his wife and child. But he was arrested in Glenwood Springs, Colorado on December 22nd for speeding and no proof of insurance after a concerned citizen called police to report his bizarre behavior. According to the arrest affidavit, a man in a 7-Eleven called police around 10:30 p.m. to report that a man who had identified himself as Craig Allen had asked to borrow his cell phone because he needed to call people about a murder. The man also mentioned that Craig Allen said that he was on the run from police because the government was trying to frame him for killing his family.
What?
He said he was headed to Las Vegas to, quote, see Donald Trump to work it out with him.
Oh, goodness. Unquote. And this was like last year. So is this after?
He was president-elect at this point.
Wow.
So, and again, remember, the murders happened December 15th. This is December 22nd. So this is a week after the murders.
Man, it's never good when you're like, I gotta go see the president. You gotta let me get there.
Not good. The caller said that the man had gotten into a white Hyundai with no license plates. Around 11 p.m., police saw a white Hyundai with no rear license plate pull into a gas station. As they watched, a man got out of the driver's seat, removed a Texas license plate from the trunk of the car, attached it to the rear license plate holder, and then sped away.
What the hell is he up to?
So police officers pulled the car over for speeding. Now, it wasn't a crazy amount. I think he was going 37 in a 25 or something like that.
They're probably just looking for something to pull him over for.
Exactly, because this fit the description of the earlier caller who had all of these weird things to say about this
so weird.
This guy. Yeah. So the man that they pulled over said that he was headed to Las Vegas, and he said, quote, it's been a long week. My wife and kids were murdered in Texas. He told the officers to call his attorney to verify that he was telling the truth, and he handed over documents showing who his attorney was. He said that he was being blamed for the deaths of his wife and child, and that he had been advised by his lawyer to get a burner phone and to remove his license plates to avoid getting pulled over by the police, which is not how that works.
No. That is the craziest
Pretty
advice.
Much a way to demonstrate, hey, I want to get pulled over by the police, is just to remove your license plates.
Just take your headlights out while you're at it when you're driving at night.
Exactly. So the police officer stated that he showed absolutely no emotion when relaying any of this information. He was basically stone-faced, no affect, accounting the murders of his wife and child a week prior.
Wow. So just like before, where he was very calm
exactly.
and collected.
Yep.
Did he go to sleep this time? Did he take a little nap?
Not quite. Not yet, at least.
Okay.
So the officers asked for the man's license and registration, and he showed them an insurance card that was expired. They asked him to get out of his car, and he refuses. He's like, no, I'm not getting out. They basically have to argue with him back and forth for like 5 minutes before he finally agreed to get out of the car, and he was handcuffed.
You're not doing yourselves any favors by refusing to get out of the car.
No. Well, he also had two loaded guns on him.
Really?
One in a waistband holder and another in an ankle holster.
What the heck is he going to do in Vegas?
The officer noted that Craig was not wearing a wedding ring, but when asked what was in his pockets, he said his wedding ring was in his pocket, along with a bunch of condoms.
Condoms?
Mm-hmm. Inside the car, they found tons of ammunition of different calibers, an AR-15, a .22 caliber rifle, empty gas cans, camouflage clothing, and bottles of several different prescription medications.
Okay, nothing good is going to happen from what was just found. So whatever he was going to do in Las Vegas was going to be bad.
It was also later confirmed that the vehicle that he was driving was Shanna's. So Craig gets arrested in Glenwood Springs, Colorado for these basic charges of speeding and having no proof of insurance. They've already contacted the Fort Worth Police Department, and the Fort Worth Police Department is like, wait a second, this guy is still under investigation for the murders of his wife and child. That's absolutely true, that part that he told you. But we're still looking at him, and I'm not even sure that they were aware that he had left Texas at this point, which is a big red flag.
That's one of the first things they tell you. Exactly. Don't leave the area.
So after he gets arrested and he's starting to get booked and he's going through the process of bonding out, Fort Worth authorities are going insane trying to get an arrest affidavit for capital murder against Craig.
Because
they know that he's being currently held, and they know if he goes, if he leaves Glenwood Springs Police Station, who knows where he's going to go next.
Yeah, plus he has all that other stuff
exactly,
with him.
He has all of these supplies. He has guns. He has ammunition. What was he planning, and what is he going
to
do after this?
Yeah, and he's already left Las Vegas.
He's already left the state. So where is he planning on going next?
Yeah,
so they basically drop everything and start focusing on this warrant for capital murder. And as Glenwood Springs, literally, they are processing his bond. He is walking out of the building. And Fort Worth Police Department sends the arrest warrant for capital murder. He is grabbed by the Glenwood Springs Police Department and held, and they end up
throwing him back in jail.
They basically throw him back into jail, and he's held on a $1 million bond to be extradited back to Texas for capital murder.
Well, and I didn't mention this earlier, but Glenwood Springs is west of Denver, and it is headed towards, like, if you're going to be going to Vegas. So that checks out.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe it was.
Wow. That they were able to be able to catch him at that perfect moment when he was about to walk out the door.
Yeah, no, that's what all of the investigators said. He was literally like about to walk out of the building when this affidavit actually went through, and they were able to send it over. And he was basically rearrested Glenwood Springs, exactly, right when this happened. And they were able to grab him and later extradite him back to Texas.
That's like the best luck
for
the prosecutors. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. Interesting.
So a little more background on Craig. Craig worked at a Costco in Fort Worth, as we already mentioned, in the optical department. Sir? I believe that this was the Costco that was in the Hewlin area.
In the Hewlin area?
I believe so. Because there was a Costco less than 5 minutes away from where they lived, but he worked at a Costco in Fort Worth, and I believe it was on that Hewlin area.
I know the exact.
So we know exactly.
I know the exact Costco you're talking about.
I think that was the Costco that he worked at.
We've shopped there.
Yes, we have. And I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure that's where it was.
Wow.
Investigators naturally want to talk to his coworkers to see if they knew any further details about Craig VanderWeege, and by God, they did. Now, it's unclear how many coworkers reported his behavior because all of their names are redacted in all of the affidavits. So I'm not sure if this was being reported by one person or by many people. It looks like it's at least two different people who talked to police. One coworker said that while Shanna was pregnant, Craig constantly spoke negatively about his wife and her appearance, complaining about her looks and the way she wore her hair. He said that she couldn't do anything right, and he complained that she constantly moved his things around. He would also say that the only way he could stand her was by drinking.
Okay.
When he first started work at the Costco, and remember, this was about 6 months before the murders took place, because they had just moved to Fort Worth not very long before. He had told coworkers that his wife was pregnant, and that he, quote, wished he could push her down the stairs and kill her. A couple of days before the murders, he told coworkers about a dream he'd had where he had, quote, sliced the heads of his wife and father like bologna.
That's just not something that you tell people.
Not normal.
No.
Not normal.
And also, you should probably mention that your coworker has said these things to you.
Yeah. Yeah. One would hope.
Slice them like bologna?
Like bologna. Why bologna?
Ugh. Because it's pink and human colored?
I don't know, man. Ugh. It's just a gross visual.
It's
and
not
a
good.
Weird thing to say.
Yeah.
Even as a joke, if somebody said that to me, I would be like, what are you talking
That's
about?
That's the worst joke ever made.
The worst. He also said he'd recently started taking anti-anxiety medication that was making him hear voices telling him to kill people.
That's when you go back to your doctor and say, hey, we have a problem.
Exactly.
This med is not good for my head.
Yeah, exactly. Someone at Costco, it seems like it was a boss or supervisor, also stated that Craig had poor social skills and he did not get along well with other employees, and that this had to be frequently addressed by management.
Well, if he's always telling people he's going to chop people up, his family like baloney, I can't imagine why.
I would hope somebody had something to say to him about that. Well, there's this little weird tidbit. The evening of the murders, Craig had also texted his boss about a female coworker, and he said the following, quote, "Another issue we need to address is her hitting me and the sales guys threatening to stab us and bragging that she knows how to make bodies disappear." Now, there is an additional context for this arrest affidavit about this particular text message. Uh-huh. So it's not clear if he sent this message out of the blue or if this was a part of a longer conversation, but either way, it's a very strange claim to make.
Yes, definitely.
I guess he was saying that this coworker was threatening him and being violent. I don't know, but it's weird.
It is weird. Also, I just had a random thought.
Yes.
Did he buy the earrings that you were mentioning earlier and the ladder from the Costco that he worked at?
Yes.
Oh, man, I should have asked that earlier, but okay, that's interesting.
Yes.
It's very interesting.
The day of the murders.
Wow. So it's just kind of handy that he had these things.
We'll talk about that. All right.
Fair enough.
Craig had also told investigators, so this is kind of going back to like the day of the murders and some additional information that the investigators found or kind of discovered throughout their investigation of this case. So Craig had left home the day of the murders around 10:30 a.m. and he had stopped for coffee for his coworkers who loved him so much, apparently. And he got to work by 11:45.
Did he also bring flowers for the ladies and donuts? And
no, it was just coffee, maybe some bagels. I think it was at Einstein Bagels, one of those places. However, a coworker reported that he had been 45 minutes late to work that day.
Was this his excuse that, oh, I stopped off and got bagels and coffee for
It's
everybody?
Not absolutely clear, but I think that's what it was. That was his excuse that he was getting coffee for everyone.
Interesting.
Remember how nothing of obvious value had been taken from the home? The TVs, the cell phones, guns, etc.
The inside of the safe?
Yeah, absolutely. There was, as far as I know, all of this stuff was out in the open. There was, in fact, a shotgun under the bed where Shanna lay that was clearly obvious as you were walking into the bedroom. There was a shotgun under the bed. So there were all of these things that were just out in the open that had not been taken. Well, later, Craig had given investigators a list of things that he claimed were taken from the home. The list included his wife's wedding ring, a pair of her diamond earrings, and a pearl necklace of hers. In other words, only his wife's items were taken that day.
Yeah.
Not the big screen TV.
Yeah, or the guns, or...
or any of Craig's items. It was just, like, a few of her little things.
Also, who breaks open a safe just to scatter what's inside amongst the room and not take any of it?
Yeah. And what about the fact that the day of the murders, as you've already pointed out, he took Shanna's car to get her tire fixed. He bought Shanna diamond earrings and a ladder to hang up their wedding photos that only screams of, I'm a loving husband who totally didn't kill my wife earlier today.
Yeah, exactly.
And finally, they looked at Shanna's phone records and saw that there was no activity on her phone after 10:30 a.m. when Craig left for work.
I mean, I'm surprised he didn't just, like, take an available credit card and be like, look, I just bought this amazing vacation for us and like, hired a nanny to come and sit our child.
Yeah, exactly. You know? So after Craig was arrested and the arrest affidavit became available. So remember, there's two arrest affidavits. Technically, there's the one in Colorado where he was just originally arrested on the basic charges of the speeding and the not having insurance. And then there was the second arrest affidavit by Texas authorities for capital murder.
And that's the extradition one when they're moving him back to Texas and giving him a
well, the extradition is the process after that. But okay. Yeah, that's. There are basically these two arrest affidavits for two completely different offenses.
Okay.
So after those arrest affidavits became available, Mark Riddle, Shanna's father, told people, quote, I've seen the police report and I am very confused. I cannot believe after reading what I've read that he's innocent, but I pray that he is. I don't know. I guess I have to leave this up to God and the law.
That's a lot of doubt.
It's just devastating for him and the Riddle family, I'm sure.
Definitely. And
I just can't believe it.
It's a big turn in a different direction for them as well, because mm-hmm. they were so behind him.
Yeah, until they actually saw the evidence.
Yeah.
All of these things that I've laid out are mm-hmm. in the affidavit, and they are damning. Absolutely. Wow. He also mentioned that Shanna, Craig, and Diedrich were supposed to go back to Colorado to visit for Christmas. So remember, these murders happened just before Christmas. And he said, quote, "I guess we had her home for Christmas, just not in the fashion we wanted."
Ugh.
Which is just heartbreaking.
That is heartbreaking.
It also seems like he or someone else deleted his earlier comments on the Star Telegram article that were in support of Craig, because I can only find those bits of his original statement that were quoted in other articles. But when I went to that Star Telegram article, his statement was no longer there. I couldn't see it. Well, and I went through all of the comments and it wasn't there. So,
well, now that he's, you know, kind of changed his tone a little bit, if someone from the Star Telegram went in and deleted that. And
maybe. Or thank maybe you. He did it himself, or yeah. But it was also reported that other members of the Vandeweghe family attended Shanna and Diedrich's funeral, and that they have been very supportive of the Riddle family.
Oh, well, good for them. Because a lot of times we see a big wedge get inserted into families like this.
Absolutely. And that wedge is not here, at least not yet. And you can actually find both Craig and Shanna's accounts on Facebook. And it's obviously very, unsettling. For example, on December 16th, 2016, the day after the murders, Craig changed his cover photo to a picture of him and Shanna in a hospital bed. And I believe this was just after she had given birth to Diedrich. And there's posts of people basically extending their condolences to him and him being like, "Thanks, man." Literally the day after. And it's so weird when you see these. I mean, we're in this digital age where everybody shares everything on Facebook. And a lot of these murders and these cases that we look into have these connections to Facebook, where you can look at a murderer's Facebook page. And it's so weird. And I mean, like I said, I looked at Shanna's Facebook account, and you can see the pictures that she shared of her wedding day and how she married her soulmate. And just absolutely just the saddest thing.
Did we have any information about her point of view versus him? Were there any friends, family that were saying, like, he, besides his coworkers, obviously, with the bologna slicing and whatnot, was there anyone else on of her friends or her personal relationships that were pointing danger warnings in his direction?
Not that I've seen. I've seen everything I saw said that this was a happy family who were excited to have the birth of their new child and really start their family and excited to move to Fort Worth. And
it seems very one-sided of like a lot of people in his personal relationships were noticing warning signs, but nobody on her side was noticing anything. The family, friends, anything like that.
Well, yeah. But I mean, that also can happen. I mean, how often do you just lie and say, "Oh, well, I'm okay, everything's cool," when you're, you come home every night and cry yourself to sleep? You know what I mean? Like, just because she maybe wasn't talking about it, at least we don't have those details now.
Yet.
And we'll talk about that here in a second.
Okay.
So what the hell happened in this situation and why? A couple little more details that maybe might, you know, maybe this is speculation. Maybe this helps us to understand what happened. I don't know. But Craig was in Texas for about 5 months looking for a house for he and his family before Shanna moved down here. Is it possible that Craig kind of got a taste for the single lifestyle and realized he really didn't want a wife and kid? Because I remember, I mean, all of this happened. I think they moved down here in May and the murders happened in December.
And how old is Diedrich at this point?
Diedrich was three.
Sorry,
3 months old.
So okay,
this is all happening very, very quickly.
So
is that a possibility? Was there another woman? Did he meet someone down here? And I mean, I don't know.
Well, I've heard, you know, that the first few months of having a child are very rough on a household, and maybe that gave him some peace and quiet to think about
what
did
he really
want this child?
Yeah. Another question that I have is, what about the surveillance cameras at Costco? Now, in one of the arrest affidavits, it does mention that they were able to confirm that he had driven Shanna's car to work the day of the murders and that he had stopped over in the like lube and tire area to get her car fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know that there's surveillance cameras in the area. So do we have any footage of him leaving maybe at lunch to go?
Oh, that's a good point.
Allegedly commit these murders, or was he there the whole day? And we know that he happened before he even went and did his shift.
Did you just think of that on your own?
Yeah, because, I mean, based on what the crime scene investigator said in the affidavit, they thought that they had been dead for longer than what Craig claimed.
And we're probably guessing there's something involving, like, the congealing of the blood or, like, the time of death.
Yeah, plus, you know, I mean, just basic stuff like rigor mortis and, and that kind of stuff. So, I mean, did he kill them the day before and then use that night, that intervening time to maybe wash up and clean the crime scene, which we know that there's evidence of, maybe get his story together, and then just like got up the next day and went to work and just did his whole full shift.
And bought coffee for everybody and bagels.
And then bought all of his presents for his beautiful wife, who he loved and adored. I mean, those are questions I have.
That is interesting that what if he took his lunch break or something to go back home or
move. The only reason why I think that the murders happened way before that is because that they were found in bed and that there was no movement. So it's not like he killed her, you know, he attacked her, slit her throat, and then put her in the bed. She was literally in bed. It's very obvious that she was in bed when she died.
Yeah, it's just like
she was asleep or, again, unconscious. So...
Yeah, it's just like in the Charles Whitman episode that we just did.
I have a little aside to mention about Charles Whitman.
Oh, okay.
So again, some other theories. Prescription med addiction, maybe. I mean, it's stated that he had a bunch of prescription medication with him when he in his car in Colorado. Was there an issue there with some kind of drug addiction? Was there mental illness involved? He did mention about he was on anti-anxiety medication.
And he was hearing voices?
Or was he setting himself up for an insanity defense? I mean, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting.
There's a lot of things going on in this case. Mm. But ultimately, the weirdest thing about the whole situation to me was, what was he doing with a car full of guns and ammo, camo clothing, empty gas cans? Was he going on a shooting spree? And again, with Charles Whitman, kills
his closest
family members before he goes on the shooting spree. He's claiming to be traveling to Las Vegas to go see Donald Trump. He has all of this gear on him. And from what I've heard, I haven't heard that he had like food or anything stockpiled, because some people have questioned maybe he was just going on the run. But I don't see anything that really suggests that he was going on the run or he was trying to evade arrest. It looks like he was going to go on a shooting spree. I mean, that's honestly what it looks like.
A lot of people who have been apprehended who are going to go on the run have like passports or extra IDs or, you know, other things so that they can evade apprehension.
Exactly.
This seems like he had danger.
According to the arrest affidavit, none of that kind of stuff was in the car.
Yeah, it seemed like he had some kind of violence and danger in the future that he was trying to bring to...
That's certainly what it seems like.
Man.
You know, thank God for that 7-Eleven cashier or whatever who called the police on this weirdo going in talking about murder and stuff. Because what else would have happened?
That is frightening. You know,
exactly. It's terrifying.
Pouring Slurpees and stopping death.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Wow.
And another question is, a lot of people who murder their families commit suicide immediately after. He did not. So there was something he was going to do. I mean, just like, again, with Charles Whitman, he had this whole plan. He had this fantasy that he was going to do. Was that what was going on here? Or, I mean, I don't know. There's so many questions.
I would say there's something going on there.
Yeah. Something for sure. As of now, there aren't any new updates on the trial, and the trial date hasn't been set yet. So I'm thinking and hoping that maybe that information will be announced sometime in the next year. Because he was arrested, I believe, December of 2016. So it's been a little over a year now since the murders and his arrest happened. So we should be expecting some trial dates getting forward here pretty soon, we would hope. If and when that happens, we will update everyone with that trial information, because that's when we're going to get all of these details. Because again, all of this information is coming from these news reports and arrest affidavits. That's all we have. So we're going to get confirmation of things and explanations of things that might maybe explain what happened and why, but maybe not even.
Stay tuned, you know. I mean, we're going to be staying tuned and we're going to keep you guys informed. And, you know, if we have more information to put out for that, we will. Maybe a bonus episode or maybe something on our eventual Patreon website. Who knows?
But to be clear, Craig Van De Weege has not been convicted of these crimes. And according to the law, he is innocent until proven guilty. I have conferred with my trial lawyer, Brienne, She passed the Texas bar.
Which is the member of our canine crime unit over here.
Yes, she's asleep right now, but she told me earlier today that we have to say allegedly, because he is not. Mm-hmm. So,
well, good, you know, on her.
Everything in this podcast is based on my opinion and your opinion. But honestly, we didn't even really speculate that much because all of this is based on what has already been reported by police investigators themselves in all of these legal documents stating that this, and this happened.
Oh, man.
And in fact, anywhere in this story that I quoted something, those quotes are coming directly from these affidavits. So, I mean,
good on you for digging through that stuff, though.
Yeah, thank you. No, I mean, it wasn't really that much, but what was there was what was so alarming and interesting.
Yeah.
At the same time, so, well, yeah.
That's what we do. We dig out these nice nuggets of true crime for the true crime posse.
We try to.
But I am very interested when we start to get more information if he does try to do that insanity defense and if
I'm thinking preemptive. That's where he's going.
Oh, that's interesting. I want
to
see
whether or not that'll work or if there's really evidence to that. I don't know, but mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that's what it's going to be the defense.
Very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll post this report to social media because I think it's very important. But I do want to mention a little bit about domestic violence because, of course, this is ultimately what this case is. According to a 2017 study by the Violence Policy Center, based on data from the year 2015, using statistics from the FBI Supplementary Homicide Report, women are far more likely to be killed by a spouse, intimate partner. A ghost just straight up came in here and threw a book off of our shelf.
And it threw the words of radiance at us.
Oh, gosh.
A Brandon Sanderson book.
Is it Brandon Sanderson? Are you with us, Brandon Sanderson?
He's alive.
Oh, my God.
He's not dead.
Oh, well.
At least, I hope you haven't died just now, Brandon Sanderson, and this is your last
fleeting
message.
I'm thinking
message.
Of Robert Jordan, who died. Yeah.
This is his last, like, effort to get someone to know that he has something left
undone. Some podcast he's never heard of and doesn't care about. Women are far more likely to be killed by a spouse, intimate partner, or family member than men. In homicides in which a victim-to-offender relationship could be established, 93% of female victims in the nation were murdered by a male that they knew. 14 times as many females were murdered by males known to them than strangers. For victims who knew their attackers, 64% of female homicide victims were wives and intimate acquaintances of their killers. And according to this study, Texas ranks number 9 in the nation in the homicide rate of female victims killed by males. In the year 2015, Texas had 213 female homicide victims, which is a rate of 1.54 victims per 100,000 women. The national average was 1.12. Guess the state with the highest rate at more than double the national average at 2.86 murders per 100,000 women.
Sorry, Pennsylvania, but I'm going to have to go with you because of Philadelphia. That's just what I'm going to have to go with.
It is not Pennsylvania.
Oh, man. Okay.
It's a state close to my heart.
Alaska?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
2.86.
Well,
over twice the rate.
There's a lot of crazy business that goes on in Alaska.
Oh my God, there is.
Have you seen Barrow or like what's the other place where they have the gold mining in the ocean? We used to watch that
Gnome.
Yeah. Gnome is like a freaking shanty town.
Oh man, it really is.
It looks like Rio de Janeiro. Like
it really does.
Everything's
if you guys are wondering, I was born in Fort Worth, but I was raised in Alaska until I was about 11 or 12. So I grew up part of my childhood in Alaska. So that's why I'm always like, oh, Alaska. Not a great stat, Alaska.
No.
The lowest rates were North Dakota and Connecticut. I believe North Dakota only because nobody lives there. It's just birds and ice.
I'm also interested to see because I know that their homicide and murder and violence rates all went up when they started finding natural gas there. And they had the natural gas boom in the recent years. Ew. So it'll be interesting to compare those
stats. I'm only bitter towards North Dakota because I don't think we have a single listen in North Dakota.
South Dakota. North Dakota listens.
North Dakota, thank you. I'm sorry. I take back everything
I said. It's South Dakota and Connecticut. Why Connecticut?
No, those are the lowest ratings. So those North Dakota and Connecticut, if you're a woman, go move there, apparently, because your husband won't kill you.
I would have guessed like Vermont.
Yeah, no.
Just because everybody's obsessed with leaf watching.
Well, again, I will post this whole study on our social media so you can go through. It'll give you the breakdown state by state about what these stats are. And I think it's really interesting.
And if you have comments to give us about your state and where they rank, throw it at us.
But furthermore, women of color, especially Black, American Indian, and Alaskan Native women were murdered at a higher rate by male acquaintances than white females. What a lot of people don't think about a lot of the times is when you think about statistics, it's usually even worse for people of color. And it's just as true here. So another little tidbit, which I think is really kind of fascinating, but there's this one little bit of news coming from this case, which is kind of interesting. So early last year, news broke about a mortuary worker who was suing his former employer, AccuCare Mortuary Services. The worker claimed that he suffered from chronic asthma after being exposed to certain fumes on the job, and that he suffered from PTSD after working on the bodies of Shanna and Diedrich Vandewege. Now, he doesn't name the Vandewege family by name, but the lawsuit specifies the date and time and other details that make it clear that he's referring to this case. The worker claims that he had a post-traumatic stress reaction and wanted to file a workers' compensation claim after working on the bodies of Shanna and 3-month-old Diedrich. He claims that he was then fired by AccuCare before he could make this workers' compensation claim. The lawsuit is asking for damages in the amount between $100,000 and $1 million. AccuCare denies his claims and stated that the worker was fired over unrelated reasons and that they are looking forward to defending themselves in court.
Is there any explanation of what he experienced or like why?
I believe it's the fact that he worked on this 3-month-old child whose neck was slashed open. You know,
isn't that a casualty of your line of work, though?
But again, even so, if you worked that kind of job and you did get PTSD or some other kind of mental reaction to, which I'm sure people do all of the time in all of these different professions. So if you did, you're liable for compensation or for whatever you need to get through that. And if they then just immediately fired him, then he does
wrongful
have a case,
termination but, is definitely wrong.
But. Exactly. But according to them, that's not the case. So this is something that's still pending. I couldn't, you know, I can just find a few news articles about that specifically, but I thought that was a bit of an interesting aspect towards this case.
Well, we always talk about people who work in funeral homes or, you know, medical examiner offices. It's just like
jurors in cases where they have to look at the
that's a rough thing
yeah that is, really really hard, and a lot of these people, they don't get the support that they need, and it does affect them absolutely. I don't know, I don't really have anything to say, like I don't have an opinion about that because I don't know what happened.
I'm just saying it's rough.
It's an interesting news story, I think, for sure.
You're doing yeoman's work, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely, abso-freaking-lutely, man.
I couldn't do it. I would throw up everywhere. You know how queasy I am.
I know you are. Oh, dear God, please tell me that you have good news for me. And can I make the announcement?
What?
That we have good news music.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Right now.
I'm so excited.
The music should be playing.
Oh, we're not going to hear it in person?
No, no, we don't hear it
now. Oh, I'm so sad.
But it involves
it's great.
It involves a train noise because, you know, we have a train that runs behind our house, and Aaron and I kind of joke and halfway believe that there's train people that jump off the train and do their train people bidding
behind
the house.
I believe it wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
And ghosts and demons in there.
It's our own, like, paranormal cryptid, you know, dark talk that we do when we have a few too many drinks. Enjoy the bed that's happening right now of music, and I'm going to give you some good news.
Yay!
All right, so our good news today actually involves some heroes. It's gonna go down that normal track where in order to have a hero, something bad's got to happen. So
gotta have a villain.
Yes. So a group of high school basketball players, they're being hailed right now because they were able to go into a home this past Saturday and rescue people inside the home. So Drew Timmy and other teammates from J.J. Pierce High School here in Dallas, which is a suburb of kind of like the Richardson area, they were driving home from a playoff win when they actually saw a home on fire. They saw like the flames coming back from their game, and it was in the North Dallas area, and they decided to veer off from where they were going and go check it out. This is a crazy story. The whole road was just covered in smoke. They really couldn't see what was going on, but they knew that something bad had happened and that they needed to go into the area and figure out what was going on. They kept seeing this kind of orange flickering, like in the smoke. That's how they knew that there was a fire. So after calling 911, the teenagers actually found the house and they headed into the house and they woke up the family. The family inside was asleep, and they were actually able to wake them up and to get them outside.
Whoa. Like before responders, like firefighters?
Oh, yeah. They're first on the scene.
Wow.
Yeah. So Drew Timmy told Fox 4 News that when him and his friends first entered the home, that the smoke inside was already thick and it was very hard to see. They were having problems breathing. Another student, he said, I just banged on the door and I guess I woke the mom up and grabbed one of the kids out of there because he was kind of close to the entrance, he said. And I just grabbed him and said, is anyone else in the house? And just started yelling inside. So at this point, Dallas Fire Rescue kind of gets to the scene and they're interviewing a couple of people that are outside. And the students are coming out with the family, the pets. And after fire investigators get there, pretty much the basketball team has just made sure everything's okay. And and the firemen are kind of mopping up their work. The fire investigators get there, and they believe that the fire was accidental, so there was no arson. It was ignited because of some sort of electrical short that was in the attic. But yeah, so this team of basketball kids who just randomly were in the area and thought they saw a house fire rescued this family.
Wow, that's crazy. That sounds like an after-school special on like Saved by the Bell or something.
Yeah, one of the family members says, I quote, I think that they're heroes and I think that they're amazing and we're very grateful for them for being so brave and for doing the right thing and for being responsible young men. We're very proud of them and God knows where we would be without them.
That's crazy. That's an awesome story, man.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like you said, it's something out of a movie or, you know, something that you might see on some network TV show where a basketball team just happens to be in the right place at the right time to rescue a family.
Well, yeah. Well, nobody was injured. That's good.
Everybody was okay. It's all good news. The pets were rescued. The family was rescued.
Aw.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Oh, that is a cute story. Well, I mean, it's not cute because I'm sure their house still burned down.
Well, hopefully they had insurance.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but hey, you know what?
At least they had their lives.
If our house burned down and some basketball team broke in here while we were asleep and got us and the dogs out, I wouldn't care that we lost all of our stuff. I would just say, hey, let's make sure we have the laptop so we have all the backup of the podcast.
What if it was the Harlem Globetrotters?
Wow. And they just come in spinning balls like through the smoke.
And that soundtrack is like behind them the whole time.
That would be pretty great.
Thanks, guys. And then they just
they're like doing tricks.
And then they just like ride off into the sunset. All right. Well, that's a good visual. I like it.
Yeah.
Very good job.
Yeah, thank you. So at this point, we typically like to read some reviews from everybody who promotes us on iTunes or Facebook. If you're not aware, you can hook up with us all over social media. We have a Twitter at ACNC Podcast, and then we have an Instagram. What's the Instagram, Aaron?
All Crime No Cattle.
Okay. And then we have a Facebook page at All Crime No Cattle. And you can find our main website at allcrimenocattle.podbean.com. And you can always email us of course, at allcrimenocattle@gmail.com.
Yes, very good. And remember, like usual, if you give us a 5-star review, either on iTunes or on Facebook, we will read it on air.
Exactly.
And I will start today with our iTunes reviews. And you guys are doing a bang-up job, by the way.
Man, we just...
We have almost too many, but we're going to read them all. Thanks. All right. This is by Rach Icron.
Rachicron.
Rachicron.
It's like a transformer.
No. Rach Icon. Rach Icon. DFW fan. Exactly the podcast I've been searching for. I love that you guys cover cases that are rarely told. I live here in DFW as well, and I am addicted to this podcast now. Oh.
Yeah.
I'm glad, Rach Icon.
What up, Metroplex friend?
The second one is from Karen Alden. They say, great podcast. Just found this podcast and it's great. Getting to be one of my faves. I think we should be your number one fave.
Are you related? Karen? Karen, are you related to Alan Alden? I love him.
I think it's spelled differently.
Oh, is it?
What That's if okay. it is Alan Alden?
Wait.
But his online persona is Karen Alden. Now, the third one is, B. Bethany Lynn.
That's correct.
Who says, fantastic. Refreshing. I'm so glad I found this gem. As an avid true crime podcast listener, I appreciate the level of research and chemistry between the hosts. Keep up the great work. Our last one comes from Marcella Renee, who says, bring it. Love the chemistry. Finally found another one to binge while I'm waiting for new episodes of my faves. Just found this through, I think it was True Crime All the Time or something. I believe she's talking about True Crime Storytime.
Yeah, because she goes on to talk about how they're Aussies.
Yeah, the one with the cool sounding Aussie chicks. True Crime Storytime, for sure. They have fantastic Aussie voices.
They're amazing.
I am very picky about my True Crime podcasts. I just like them a certain way, and this one is awesome. Cue high-pitched glam voice.
Awesome!
It took me forever to figure out how to do an iTunes review. Maybe I'm old, but seriously, I had to Google a walkthrough. Now I can do the other faves, and by do, I mean rate. Yes, I understand you. I'm an old person as well, and I just don't understand anything.
I wouldn't say that. You're very smart. But we totally feel you, Marcella. Things are complicated
I didn't
sometimes.
Know how to do an iTunes review until we started this podcast.
Well.
And now I give them out like candy.
That's right.
On Halloween. Give us some Facebook reviews, sir.
All right. Facebook reviews, whoever this person is that I'm married to. I don't know what that voice is, but all right. Wait, didn't you just do Marcella Renee?
Uh-huh.
Well, she left us a Facebook review as well.
Well, read it. I guess we're doubling down, Marcella Renee.
All right. Marcella Renee says, I finally figured out how to do an iTunes review. We know. We just read it.
Marcella Renee, you're my favorite. That is the funniest thing. Yeah.
And then she says, patting myself on the back in parentheses, almost caught up, and then I'll be all out of podcast episodes, sad face. Love the chemistry between Shea Butter and Aaron.
She's the one who said Shea Butter, too. I wonder if that was a phone correction, an autocorrect, or maybe she just wants to call you Shea Butter.
I like to imagine that it was what she wanted to say.
We now have people calling you Shaw, and we now have people calling you Shea Butter.
I like both. I like Shaw a little bit more, but I'm okay with Shea Butter.
Aw, you're my little Shea Butter.
They are awesome, and I love the conversations and the humor. Laughy face. Thank you, Marcella Renee, for the second time. That was pretty great. Missy Guzzo says, oh my God, amazing podcast. Obsessed with true crime, .. And this is one of my new favorites.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, Missy. Aaron Shipley says, this is a fantastic Texas true crime podcast. Great research. Even greater husband and wife team hosts. Not in the least annoying in any way. And you just might learn a little something as well. Thank you for the great work that you all put into the stories that you do.
Did I write that? I feel like I would have written that. Oh, they're not that annoying, really.
Not in the least annoying in any way.
Like,
thank you, Aaron Shipley. I think Aaron Shipley might be Aaron.
Oh,
wait, we said your last name. I think Aaron Shipley might be a pseudonym for your Aaron name.
My name is Aaron.
Everybody knows that by now.
You know, S. Aarons, we just know how to write a good review. And we're brilliant people, and we're really good fans, and we know what we're talking
okay,
about.
Okay, I got two more, and I'm going to do two more real quick. Yeah, so the two others that I have to do really quickly are Jimmy Hatley. He gave us 5 stars on Facebook. Thanks, appreciate that. Didn't say anything, but that's fine. I appreciate the 5 stars. Moving on to Sue Neal. Great podcast, terrific depth of research, and the banter is delightful.
Yeah.
We're delighting you. What else do we have to talk about? Get your totes and your merchandise at allcrimenocattle.threadless.com. We now have a tip jar on our Podbean website. If you want to give us some tips, you know, of the ducat kind, the dollars, the bucks, the greenbacks. What else?
Go watch Black Panther. It's really good.
Man, we went and saw Black Panther. It was amazing.
Yeah, that's what we got to do on our break.
Oh, my God.
We got to go watch a movie. It was fantastic.
We were still, like, a little bit sick, but it was amazing.
It was great.
And we ate sushi afterwards, and it was delicious.
Also great.
All right.
All right. Well, I think the last thing we need to talk about is our promo this week, which is for Marble Orchard Podcast.
That is correct. Yeah, Marble Orchard, they reached out to us a little bit back, and we wanted to feature them on the podcast. They're a podcast that is hosted by Prickly Pete and Faye Daniel, and their podcast pretty much just explores, like, murders, mysteries of the American Southwest, like in Arizona, New Mexico, that kind of area. So if you're into that kind of thing, like aliens, cryptids, haunted stories, all things creepy, go check it out. They're fun. They make lots of jokes. And yeah, they're good.
All right, guys. That is it for this week. Be sure to come back and check us out next week for episode 13. That will be a Shay episode.
Yeah, messages.
And I get to lay here and do nothing. Go check out Marble Orchard Podcast and all of the other things that we told you to do.
And we have more information coming out about a meetup in the DFW area. We'll talk to you about it later. It's going to be cool. But until then, always remember, crime is bigger in Texas, y'all.
Bye.
Adios.
Welcome to the promo for the Marble Orchard Podcast, a weekly podcast that explores emerging mysteries of the American Southwest. Hosted by me, Prickly Pete, and my co-host,
Faye Daniel. And we're not just another true crime podcast. We also discuss history, unexplained events, and local monsters.
You can find the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or your favorite podcast listening app.